CliffCentral.com.
No more bullshit.
The Gareth Cliff Show on CliffCentral.com.
Yes, good morning, everybody. Ba 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 ba. It's Thursday morning. You made it this far. You made it to November. Look at you. Aren't you proud of yourself?
Very.
You crawled over the finish line of October to November.
Oh,
you
I
made
mean,
it. Like those people at the Comrades who. You know those ones, those sad, sexist shit who haul themselves like a bag of puke over the line at the end of the day just before they ring that gong and chase the other ones home? You made it. You made it to November. The second last month of the year. And the last really productive month of the year. Because after this, people just go onto a freewheel. Downhill to the holidays!
Well, it's a particularly special month, of course, because it starts with the birthday of Mr. Gary Player.
Oh, is that... When is it? Today?
Today, Gareth, obviously.
Today, it's Gary Player's the 1st of November, huh?
1st of November, yeah.
That's legendary.
How old is he now?
He's 83, Gareth.
83 years old.
83 years young.
Wow. I mean, that's unbelievable. So what are we doing to celebrate Gary Player's birthday, Ben?
83 jumping jacks, Gareth.
What?
83 jumping jacks.
How?
Everyone's going to do that.
What?
Can't we rather play golf or something?
No, yeah.
Have a drink
I'd rather
in his honour.
Play golf for the whole day than do that.
Mr. Gary Player has done so much for this country, you can at least do 83 jumping jacks.
I know what he's
Is that what he wants
83?
Us to do?
Gareth, he doesn't want us to do anything. He just wants us to be better, more like him. So it's up to you to do that for yourself.
Well, I mean, he's still very flexible.
Well, of course, yeah.
How many does he? How many push-ups does he do every day? He talks about often 1,000 or
yeah,
something.
He loses count.
And
not,
beating
not, not
himself
because
in
he's
the
old.
Chest.
It's just that he just does so many.
That's great.
1935.
We should all aspire to be like Gary.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm going to see Gary on the 22nd of November.
Are you going to the Nedbank Golf Challenge?
I'm not. No. Although he is the host of that amazing event. I'm going to the Gary Player Invitational, which happens a little bit later.
Did you receive an invitation to the Invitational?
I did, Leanne, yes. I'm not just going there as a stalker.
You're not allowed to just pitch.
I'm on the inner circle here.
You can't just arrive. They get very uptight. speaking of invitations, I'm going to see Crooked Hillary today.
Oh, wow.
Did she perhaps arrive today?
She arrived yesterday, I think. Why?
Oh,
was there a
The biggest blue light brigade I've ever seen in my life this morning.
Well, maybe.
Where was it headed?
It was headed. It was on the M1 South.
Huh.
Probably coming from Pretoria.
So basically, she's no different to the ANC, this Crooked Hillary.
Guys,
no different whatsoever.
Guys, can we just cut her some slack?
You're not that important. What are you? I mean, she doesn't even dance like Theresa May. She offers us nothing.
Except roaring books time after time. Because how many books has she released now?
No, well, this...
Still nothing aiding
her. It Takes a Village. It Takes a Village was her one. That's about how, you know, kids these days. And she's got one, Chelsea, who's now... She's a grandma, Hillary.
Mm.
And she wrote this book about the system of education, how we can change that, blah, blah, blah. Then she wrote... I think she wrote one or two other political-focused books and then her recent What Happened.
And the other one, Where's Bill? That was one of her hits.
I think you're mixing that up with Where's Wally?
Bill's Working Late Again.
Yeah. Bill, the title was Bill's Working Late Again, ... And you must complete the picture.
Well, yeah, because I saw a couple of friends of mine taking pictures with David Cameron as well.
Oh, so where was he?
He arrived yesterday.
Yeah?
And I think he went to the Nelson Mandela Foundation. He was just schmoozing and boozing a couple of people. So he's already in the country because he'll also be there at the conference today.
Well, I'm quite interested to meet him because, or to speak to him or to hear what he has to say, because he has been involved in technology. What he's trying to do is to disintermediate government. You know, he was in government and then he had to resign because of Brexit. Because he said, all right, let's have a referendum, you people. We'll give you a goddamned referendum. And then they said, fine, we want to leave the EU. And he was like, well, I can't manage that. I'm out. Hmm. So then he started managing a number of different business interests. Among all of them, how technology can make government more effective and less necessary. You know, ultimately, the point is that we want we want to be less reliant on government, not more reliant on government. And he is behind a number of initiatives that will make it easier for people to govern their own lives without government, as I understand it. I may be completely wrong, but that's one of the reasons I want to hear him talk.
That's incredible. So he resigned not because he stole anything, and then he wants to help government after having to resign. So
yeah, well,
so he didn't steal, and then he didn't impede the government after he left. This is
no
jeepers.
See, he also, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just casting him in far too good a light, but like any politician, you know, he's after the public's money, and he's trying to find ways to make that money work in a private business sense to produce public good. So, I mean, he's not an altruist. He's not going into it because he's kind and thoughtful and he's a social worker. He's going into it because he sees an opportunity here to take government out of the equation and make them much more useful.
Well, it sounds like someone's got a civic duty which they've got the balls to pursue.
Sure. Let's see if he can do it.
Hmm. And our president will be there.
Tell us about, Cyril's going to be there. Yeah.
Tell us about Hillary, Gareth. What's she done?
Well, you know what Hillary's done. She was Secretary of State. She was quite an effective Secretary of State, if you include some of the things that she did that are to do with trying to make the world a little bit more manageable, and there were a few of those. And then there are those things that people criticize her for the whole time, like Benghazi and Iran and, you know,
Wearing
pantsuits. I mean, what a thing to criticize her for. What would you like her to wear? Would you like her to wear a hula skirt? I mean, what are people after? You know?
Yeah, but this is coming from a guy who used to be so scathing towards Michelle Obama's attire.
Who? Sia?
Sia used to basically picture her as a strumpet.
I was not scathing towards her attire.
So yeah, there were some dark mornings in the show. Poor Michelle was being pulled over the coals because she just wanted to look sexy.
Well, there are a couple of other people talking too. There's a guy called Clayton Christensen who's very interesting. He has a number of really cool marketing and market-related theories, which I think are fascinating. And they've done research. He and his business partners have done research into, you know, why humans make the decisions they make. I saw a great video about how when people get a milkshake from a takeaway place, they're actually doing it because it gives them something to do on the way to somewhere on a long road trip. And a milkshake lasts about 20 minutes because it's thick.
Mm.
It gives people something. It feeds that hole that they have inside of them that they need to fill with something that tastes good and makes them feel a bit, you know, safe. And
Comfort food,
yeah. It's not because it tastes a certain way. Because McDonald's and all of these other guys were doing all of this research around, should we make it more sugary, more milky, more thick, more thin, whatever it is. And none of that stuff mattered. It turned out that people were just buying milkshakes at takeaway places because it filled a hole in their lives.
Yeah, and that's why they made the milkshakes out of potatoes.
Oh, is that true? Wow. God, I didn't know that. That's rather revolting.
I know.
Who's making milkshakes out of potatoes?
Everyone.
McDonald's were the first ones to really be known for it.
Mm.
I'm sure everyone else jumped on the let's fill stomach bandwagons.
I know they make it out of, like, it's not real milk in there anymore. It's like out of a packet.
Maybe
and
it's like potato starch.
And they bleach the meat in the burgers.
Ugh.
Sorry to break it to you, Sia. Your nutritional childhood is a myth.
Mm. Well, Sia does eat that kind of thing every day.
See, what are we eating? I don't want to think about this anymore. I really don't.
I've seen Sia have breakfast that includes a McDonald's, like, selection.
Hey, those are, you know, you can get a healthy hash brown.
Healthy hash brown.
But guys,
much of oil.
To McDonald's defense, their taglines have been, I'm loving it, not like, oh, that's nice food.
I'm loving it, not I'm healthy and fit.
Yeah, exactly. I'm loving it. Potatoes, milkshakes, whatever.
There's a guy called Jim O'Neill coming. He's from the UK. He was at Goldman Sachs. He's going to talk about BRICS. He was the commercial secretary to the Treasury. Caroline Webb, who is a behavioral economist. Those people are always fascinating to talk to because they are paying attention to what humans are doing and using data points to try and figure out what it is we want because we don't know. A guy called Ifoso Ojomo, who is a Harvard alumnus and a Clayton Christensen Institute fellow. He's going to be presenting, I think, with Clayton Christensen. Then there's Stephen Kosseff, who I actually spent an hour with yesterday. He's the
investor guy, right?
Yes, he's also director of Business Leadership South Africa, former chief executive of and founder of the Investec Group. Very smart man. I mean, You say to him, what do you think? And before you finish the K and think, he's giving you a... He's unstoppable. He's like a bulldozer, this guy. But he is absolutely one of the smartest people in South Africa and understands the principles of up and down and plus and minus and supply and demand better than pretty much anyone I've met. Costa Semenya will be talking there.
Oh, of course, she's one of the new ambassadors.
Correct.
Oh,
gold medalist at the 2018 Commonwealth Games, right. 2016 Olympic gold medalist. And then Adrian Gore, who's, of course, the group chief executive of Discovery Limited, and himself an incredible success story, really. We've met him once or twice. So I think out of these people, there isn't a weak link. Ben would say Crooked Hillary, maybe.
Well, I wouldn't say she's a weak link. I would say she's a huge name, obviously.
Sure.
I don't think she's worth the money, though.
No, probably not.
I mean, I'm not saying that to be controversial. I'm looking at it like a rants and cents kind of thing, you know, open up the industry.
How? You just put in every phrase and terminology you could into that statement.
We all know Crooked Hillary's story, though. Like, what's she really going to share with us? Gareth just rattled off a name of incredible people with so much to share and maybe help this country. What's Crooked going to talk about?
What happened?
We know what happened. She lost.
That's her whole
and,
thing
and,
right
and
now.
And Bill's here, so we know where Bill is. So great. I mean,
he's working late so again.
Yeah, he's call me clinical, but I don't see how someone as progressive as Discovery is going to get value out of someone like her, other than just it's a big name.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people, you know, these tickets are like 7,000 rand a piece.
Shucks.
Yeah, they're not. Got to pay for all these people.
Oh, Hillary's got to eat, huh? Hillary's got a Blue Light Brigade.
If it is.
Jeepers, it's like hosting a blesser, but you don't get anything back.
Well, you're going after her, but her husband is a former president, and he's speaking too.
Yeah.
And he, as a former president, has a certain, you know, level of security and comfort and need and
a rider.
Yeah, big time. He's a former president. Yeah. You have to call him Mr. President, even though he's not president anymore.
As I said, call me a socialist when Theresa May was here, but she doesn't need her own plane. She can fit into a compartment that every other human does. It's called economy. You're not coming here to cure AIDS or cancer. You're coming here to talk about stuff we already know in the news.
What do we have to call Ben, mind your tongue with this. What do we have to call Hillary?
Secretary Clinton.
CH.
What does CH stand for? Exactly. Going down a road we shouldn't.
Why, you think you're standing at the back of the room, Ben, and shouting, lock her up.
I haven't got 7,000 rand. I'll spend 7,000 rand to go see her.
I'm surprised you weren't at the airport yesterday, heckling the heck out of her.
Sooner buy a new camera lens.
Anushka says, Ben, you made me lose 3 days of my life by watching that Queen of the South series. I started on Sunday and finished both seasons yesterday. I'm inspired to be the Queen of South Africa.
How about that? That show, it drags you in.
Tell me about it.
It's like the female version of Narcos, but just faster and more interesting and better cast. It's just very good.
It's amazing. All right. Funda saying, no more bullshit. I love that theme song. I just know it's about to get Garething after that. That's true. All right. So this morning, there are a couple of things that we can talk about in the news a little later on. Leanne is here. Sia's here. Nola's here. Ben's here. We have a burning platform later on with Catherine Child, who we had a successful debut with not so long ago, and she's made two appearances since then. So people like her, and she's back. And we're going to keep bringing you some of the best people to give you the analysis, to explain the situation to you, and make politics interesting. Make politics great again. That's the idea.
Mapper.
I know, Mapper.
Make anything great again.
That's right.
Are you guys having a stroke?
Yeah,
what's happening?
It sounds almost
right
like
now.
We're having strokes. I heard the most fascinating lecture. You know, I can't help it when I'm driving around. I don't listen to radio anymore. I don't listen to music very much. Listen to podcasts. And I heard this great lecture that a guy called Yuval Noah Harari, I've spoken about him before on the show, guy who wrote Sapiens, Homo Deus. He was talking about how the biggest threat to humanity in the 20th century, because he's a historian, was exploitation. Exploitation of workers, exploitation of soldiers. That's what people were for. and that the leaders of the 20th century had to build hospitals, build schools, build sewage systems, not because they cared about people, but because if they didn't have those people on their side, who would fight in the army? Who would work in the factories? That's the reason that, you know, Stalin and Hitler and even the liberal democracies that we regard as being significant contributors to our current state, the United States of America, various European countries, the reason that they were nice to their people and that they looked after their health and security and all of that stuff is so that they could expand, grow, produce. That's what they were really doing, if you cynically look at it. So the greatest
really
threat
does make you feel like a lab mice.
Well, we were part of a system in the 20th century, and before that it was probably worse because you were working for a lord or a king or a priest, and you really didn't have much of a bigger scheme idea of being part of something. I mean, you weren't part of some great conquering nation. Very often you were just a cog in a tiny machine. Anyway, now, he says, because exploitation was the biggest thing, and that was how workers rallied, and populism was important. And now he says the biggest threat to humans, I don't even know if you're interested in this, but I found this fascinating.
I'm sitting on the edge of my seat
here. Okay, good. So exploitation in the 20th century, what do you think the biggest threat to humans in the 21st century is going to be?
And could this be anything like illness or?
It could be anything, yeah. I'm not going to give you the answer. You're going to guess a few, and then eventually when we get frustrated with your answers, then I'll give you the answer he gives.
Is it an illness or something physical?
No.
I'd like to say overpopulation, but it sounds too obvious.
Is it lack of evolution or education?
No.
Are we going to all burn to death from the hot sun?
No.
Oh.
You're such an optimist.
Artificial intelligence taking over?
Diminishing fish products.
See, it's getting warmer.
Ooh.
Diminishing fish products are not.
Well, that was my best.
Artificial intelligence taking over. You said we're warm.
The internet falling apart.
No, irrelevance.
Ah.
That's going to be.
That's so well.
Irrelevance is the thing that people are going to have to battle against in the next century.
Not like, oh my gosh, you aren't following the latest hashtag on social media. Relevant.
No. Okay. No. I mean relevance, because so people talk about relevance like, how famous are you, or how well known are you, or how much do people recognize your face.
But
that's
you,
not it.
But like you mean it in the sense that, well, just because you move rubbish around doesn't mean you have a job. That kind of relevance.
Right. So
being replaced by robots.
What I was saying about the 20th century and how people needed, the leaders of those times needed the people because they needed to have an army and a factory, and you needed to be production facilities, or they needed to be organized military. Now, if you look at what's happening with the militaries of the world, they're becoming smaller and smarter.
Yes, with drones.
Yes, among other things.
Here we go. Drones. Always comes back to drones.
Well, I mean, drones are part of it, but there is artificial intelligence being built into this. Basically, we're becoming much more effective at killing exactly the right people.
Mm.
Our aim's getting better.
That's yes, cool. And we need less guns and less men and less tanks and less ships, because we can do it with far fewer things, because a lot of it will be done by machines. I mean, most of the people killed during Barack Obama's term as president were killed by drones, right?
A flick of a button.
Yeah, you didn't have to have troops on the ground. So that means that the people who would have been troops are now kind of irrelevant. And there are two ways that this can go. I found this really interesting. The good way for it to go is that we all end up being relieved of the shitty jobs. Like, you don't have to have someone who picks up the garbage. You don't have to have someone who goes to war. You don't have to have someone who cleans the house.
Mm.
You know, all those jobs that we really don't enjoy. I mean, nobody enjoys, digging holes, fixing roads. Mm. No one wants to do. Machines will do. All that stuff. So the best case scenario is that we end up in a world where all of us get to live. We get to enjoy our time. We get to choose how we spend our time. You can do it, you can use it making yourself a better human being, reading more, learning more, thinking about how you work, trying to figure out your own pros and cons, self-improvement. You can spend it meditating. You can spend it creating things, painting, drawing, sculpting. Making the world interesting.
Yeah. Drinking, Leanne.
Looking after animals, whatever it is. Those are important things. And you'll be able to do that because you'll be relieved of the work. Everyone will
really
have
good.
Enough because the machines will be doing the hard labor. That's the best case scenario. The worst case scenario is a whole different story. The worst case scenario is that we become irrelevant in a way that the machines make us blobs. We don't have purpose. We don't have a reason to get up in the day. We don't have a reason to exist in the first place. Perhaps we find ways to wipe out huge swathes of humanity because they're no longer functional, useful, purposeful, interesting. They're just organic matter. That's
and
a terrible
boredom
outcome.
Leads to a lot of bad things.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, a lot of people, you're very grateful that they have work because otherwise they'd be serial killers.
Yeah.
You know? So these are things to think about. And I found this fascinating. I was driving around yesterday. I had the busiest day probably I've had all year yesterday. And today's also going to be insane. And I was listening to this stuff between meetings. I was fascinated. I was alive. I was thinking the whole time and listening and paying attention and trying to imagine. Loved that.
Well, as
made
a
driving worth it.
As a drama student, apart from hugging trees,
you were a drama student? Yes. No,
not like you
impossible.
At all.
Not to sound dramatic, but you were a drama student.
Don't ignore all of this. As a drama student, one of the books we read is called Waiting for Godot. And it's a play, and within it, one of the themes is how life is simply just cyclic. And we're all trying to create meaning for ourselves. And if you really think about it, what do you talk about at the dinner table? What do you complain about after a long day? It's all of the things that currently preoccupy your life. It's the economy. It's your work. It's how busy you were. It's how long you were stuck in traffic for. Now, if we took all of that away,
it's your health. It's your
what would we have?
Well, I mean, people are inordinately preoccupied with money at the moment. Because money is really the means through which people have options.
Right? So if you lived in the society where
if you lived in a society where you could go to an art gallery anytime you wanted, where you could access any information you needed, it wouldn't cost you a thing, where you could buy a house and live in that house and make it your kind of house, and you could go anywhere you wanted to and it wouldn't cost you an arm and a leg. Then,
I think we'd lose meaning.
Then, well, I don't know. Maybe we wouldn't talk so much about money. Maybe we'd talk about more interesting things.
Like not the weather.
Yeah. I mean, people used to talk about horses and carts the whole time. Oh, you cannot believe the number of horses and carts downtown today. Oh, it's just the smell of the dung. And then they invented the car. Nobody talks about horses and carts and dung anymore. No one. There was a point where New York might have become unlivable. Because of horse dung.
Well, the gangs of New York, that movie shows you.
The horses were dying on the side of the road. They just left them there. And people, that's the only way you could get from A to B. They had more horses in New York than people at one point.
All that dung.
Yeah. Huge amounts of dung. And it would have crippled the place. I mean, people would have moved out of New York. And then, boom, just in time, cars. And then the horses were like, thank fuck. We were tired.
So tired.
I mean, it's poor horses.
All lay down and died.
They've been taken into war. Shame. They've been pulling people and plows and all kinds of shit around for years. I don't want to do that anymore. Now horses are like only owned by very rich people or very poor people. Very rich people breed these thoroughbreds that are worth hundreds of thousands. They live better than most humans. They have heated stables and they have flavored water and they get hay and teff and lucerne that's grown by the same people who grow the wine vineyards. And, you know, it's just incredible. So horses now have a much better time thanks to their unique place in human society. It never used to be like that. They would basically be used until they were dead.
Which is the other side of the coin, as you mentioned.
And that
still happens.
Look at us. Look at horses. Figure out the parallels. And accept the difference being, in our case, that it will be superhumans or machines that control our destiny. And if it goes the right way, it could be great, like the horses that live in the heated stables and that eat the great teff and lucerne and go out and exercise and they get brushed and they look amazing and they shimmer in the light. And they jump over a couple of things and people clap wildly like it's the greatest achievement in all of history. That's the good way to end up as humans. The bad way to end up is being worked to death or not even being put out to work because you are useless. There's a machine that can do everything better than you. Think about that. Got to make yourself useful.
Oh, man.
You'll be that dead horse on the side of the street in New York.
You've also got to want to be useful. Some people just have no need to be useful. It's bizarre.
You know who's useful at the moment? People who do labiaplasties.
Ah.
You heard about this? You know what labiaplasty is, right?
Tell us, Gareth.
Well, it's where they cut the pussy lips.
Neaten everything up.
Yeah, I mean, there's no other way to say it, right?
Short back and side around the lady area.
The outside of the vagina. Right.
Yeah, that's right.
Rosie is having her labiaplasty done privately by Dr. Hend, who specializes in vaginal cosmetic surgery.
Okay.
She'll have local anesthetic, and shockingly, she'll be awake while she has her labia sliced off.
Okay.
Rosie, I want you to relax.
Okay.
Sure, you're only going to slice my
vagina. Right, just cleaning you inside, Rosie.
Okay.
Right, so it's a little bit uncomfortable. Sorry, darling. Sorry, that's it. Okay. That's it.
So he's busy with the...
Right, you can see all that skin is too much. So what we're going to do, we're going to do some marking.
It looks completely normal to me.
That's the commentator.
Right, this is a little bit stingy here.
Okay. By the way, I've got to point out at this stage that the commentator is very much opposed to vaginoplasties of any kind.
She's not neutral.
No, she says, looks perfectly normal to me. I mean, Rosie wants her fucking vagina sorted out, all right?
I mean, what are we talking about here? Like a dropped Gatsby?
Look, you know a ham sandwich with a ham sticks out of the sandwich quite a lot? That's
Sia
what we're dealing
has just soiled himself because he doesn't even like vaginas at the best of times.
Just listen.
Nor do I like ham. It's just my world's colliding. The vegetarian and the gold star gay in me just can't do.
Have you ever seen beef pastrami?
where it's gone kind of grey.
Have you ever heard the term beef curtains?
Yes. Oh, gosh.
Okay. But you know what? Your visuals actually did help.
Now you understand
sandwich.
What it looks like. Because you haven't seen one of these for a long time. Right, let me
Never.
Help you. So Rosie, God bless her. Rosie wants to have this tidied up.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks it's okay. Not. I mean, I know lots of girls who don't have an issue with, you know, whether it's an outie or an innie. It's no big deal to them. And if you're a woman and you decide you like what you got, then that's brilliant.
Most times it's the braid that's too big for the ham. That's the problem. And that gets in the way. I know women who've had kids and things, you know, it's actually, you end up needing to almost wear men's underpants to fit everything in. You've got to kind of fold it up.
Well, it happens.
Just breathe,
so Rosie just wants, she wants her, you know, she wants the outer labia trimmed a little bit.
Yeah, the bread's too big.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
You can be here, Digna.
He's just injecting her.
You're doing very well.
Give her a local anesthetic.
It's okay.
After 1 minute, you will not feel any pain. Okay?
Oh,
my
gosh.
Yeah.
One minute is a long time.
Yeah. Okay. And then he just takes the scalpel and he just slices them off.
Oh, sharp?
Ah. Yeah.
You're not picking drugs, are you?
No. I wish. Right now.
Sitting there with his sister, then he just slices them off all neatly and sutures them together.
That's it. Labia is being cut.
Right.
I'm so sorry.
Really? He doesn't cut off that much.
Went very well. Okay?
Yeah.
I've done very well, Doctor.
Yeah,
I finished.
Finished, yeah.
All done.
Listen to the commentator.
It's like elastic band. Once you cut it, you shrink.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh my god.
Okay. It's outrageous that a girl like Rosie has gone to such extreme lengths to make herself feel normal. Surely, girls, there must be another way.
And the show is called The Perfect Vagina.
See, when you
there must be another way. Well, firstly, local anesthetic, no thanks. Put me under general.
Okay.
You want to be knocked out.
And secondly, what other way? What must we exercise our braids? You know, you can't. You can only exercise the ham and tomato.
Well, for some people, it's very important what it looks like.
Yeah.
I mean, for a lot of other people, it would be more important what it feels like and how it makes you feel.
It, and again, it can be a problem, like discomfort issue.
Sure. And I think everybody's, again, you've got the right to bodily integrity and you've got the right to decide what you want to do with that body of yours. You own your meat.
But we do see too much of the same type of looking vagina on, you know, from our time with porn.
We see a lot of porn and we think that that's how all
but
vaginas
look. But if you just
look.
Google vaginas.
A lot of guys, when they see like a normal girl, they're like, whoa.
What happens when you do actually Google vaginas?
Here we go. All right.
You can have that on your Google history. Not
well, I'm already getting blackbirded, so they can have vaginas too.
What came up, Leanne?
Oh, no, man. You know...
Jeepers.
Sores and
oh, you end up with problems. Yeah. You go straight to the problems. Well, that's Google for you.
Well, there are some fruit references on my one.
Yes, like
is it pawpaw?
Yes, I've got an orange as well.
Is an apricot?
All right, it's time for the.
That's a sweet potato. That's not so sweet anymore.
All right, it's time for the five things. Stop it, you lot. All right, five things you need to know today. First of all, you want to know about Khashoggi?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, he was strangled, dismembered as soon as he entered the Saudi consulate. So there's no fist fight or any of that rubbish that they were saying beforehand. He was strangled as soon as he walked in and then dismembered as a part of a premeditated plan. Turkey's chief prosecutor said this on Wednesday, making details of the murder public for the first time. The revelations came just hours after Saudi Arabia's chief prosecutor left Istanbul, and the Turkish prosecutor's office said it was obliged to reveal the details after the talks produced no concrete results. Gruesome reports in Turkish media had previously alleged that Khashoggi, critical of the powerful Saudi crown prince, had been killed and cut into pieces by a team sent from Riyadh to silence him. His body had not been found. In accordance with plans made in advance, the victim was strangled to death immediately after entering the consulate of Saudi Arabia in Istanbul on October the 2nd for marriage formalities, said a statement from the office of the Istanbul chief prosecutor. The victim's body was dismembered and destroyed following his death by suffocation, again in line with advance plans.
So they didn't want anyone to find out about this, obviously, the way that they had done it.
No. And Trump has called it one of the worst cover-ups in history and has warned against halting a Saudi arms deal, saying it would harm U.S. jobs. Well, you know, you got to do what you got to do. Hey, Donald, if the money's coming in, you're suddenly not so critical of your allies. The SABC is to offer some staff alternative employment options.
Yeah.
Aren't you glad you're not there?
Oof.
God, what a nutcase that whole arrangement is. That whole place. I mean, poor Chris Murray-Ling. He says there will be a critical skills audit and those who don't qualify may fall victim to retrenchments. Well, we know, having been there, 90% of the people at the SABC don't have the critical skills requirements.
Definitely not.
If you don't show them where the door is, they keep walking into the wall until eventually they just stop moving. They just fall there. These are really, really low-functioning people.
Until they just stop moving.
And I'm talking about just the radio division. God alone knows what happens in TV. The organization announced on Wednesday it was technically insolvent. Too broke to operate.
Joy.
People still ask me, do you miss it?
No.
Have you read the news? Are you even paying attention to what's going on? The company's wage bill constitutes half of its 6 billion rand revenue. Chief Operations Officer Chris Murray-Ling said there will be a critical skills audit. Those who don't qualify may fall victim to retrenchments. Well, they're already victim to their own.
It should have been done a long time ago.
They're already victim to their own uselessness. He says the SABC will undergo restructuring to a fit-for-purpose stature. Well, good luck to you, Chris. He's a good guy. He's trying his best. Meanwhile, they're trying to recover money from employees who were appointed irregularly by the previous management.
Oh.
All these people who got paid way too much money to do nothing. You've never heard of them.
And then there's just Cloudy. Just that one entity.
Exactly. Thank you.
And that is why I won't pay the TV license.
There we go.
Mine's a debit order.
E12.
You are such a good person. Why do you do this?
I'm such a conformist.
You debit all your teeth. Oh,
stop it. H&M are to speak at anti-racism conferences after the monkey ad blunder. You remember the coolest monkey in the jungle shirt?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And that little ad with the black kid? The global retail store is expected to share insights about the interventions they've employed following their racist hoodie advert. Please, can we stop with this this masochistic hand-wringing and apology-making that goes on every other day because of a bunch of lunatics on social media who are much too sensitive for their own good, who have unfortunately argued themselves out of any relevance in society because they're upset by everything. This was not a premeditated plan by H&M to be racist. When do we take people's intent into consideration? Is that not important? It's important in a murder. Therefore, it should be important in less important things.
Yeah, true.
If Ben is desperately trying to upset and inflame and outrage and incense and insult people in a racist way, then you can take it for granted that Ben is a racist and you can argue about Ben and his need to be a part of society. But if Ben is not and he slips up like H&M did, and he doesn't go around calling people the N-word or the K-word, what's wrong with you that you infer that upon him? What kind of bizarre dark obsessions do you stew over every day and night? What kind of misery do you live in that you try to find this in someone? Like a witch burner in Salem in the 1600s. Witch burn her! That's what it is. Now H&M are holding a global conference.
Oh my word.
To talk about how they dealt with this. You
Why
know what?
Do they even do this?
Someone in an ad agency said, that is a cute kid. That is a cool top. Doesn't go, monkey, black people, because they're not racist.
That's they were the racist. People who have the problem with it
Jesus.
Are the ones who are thinking things into it.
I mean, for God's sake. And then you remember the EFF stormed their stores, probably thereby creating a whole new slew of racists who said, well, look at how the EFF behave. You know, racists will use any excuse, and there are a lot of them. But why are we going after the wrong people? Just so odd. Anyway, they've been at a 2-day conference that will be hosted by the Anti-Racism Network South Africa. You would think these people would find productive ways to spend their day. The Ahmed Katrada Foundation said the retailer would be expected to share insights about the interventions they've employed following the racist hoodie advert, because God forbid we should have another ad come out that sends people screaming into the streets, putting out the flames on their backs. What we should do is send a whole lot of people who were upset into therapy. That's what we should do.
Yeah.
You want to cure that problem?
It would take more than a 2-day conference to clear that problem.
Honestly, what a lunatic asylum we live in. Another executive is out amid sexual harassment tension at Google. Turns out Google's pretty dodgy when it comes to sexual harassment. Alphabet on Wednesday, that's the parent company, confirmed an executive accused of sexual harassment left the company without an exit package as tension over its handling of such matters heightened. Word that Rich Duvall, what a name, a director at X-Lab devoted to moonshots such as internet service from balloons, was
that
out.
Whole sentence was very weird.
So the moonshot stuff is, you know, when you aim for the stars, but you land on the moon.
Right.
Or is it the other way around? I can't remember. But a moonshot's basically a great idea that you have no idea of how to make happen. It's a fantasy that you try to pursue using technology and science. And they want to do internet from balloons. In fact, they were talking about this particularly in Africa. You know, we've got these helium weather balloons that go up and down that measure all kinds of things in the atmosphere. Imagine if we could put like a router in there that could beam down free internet to the people who live under that balloon.
Mm.
It'd be useful. There are places where you don't have fixed line. There are places where you don't have 3G and 4G and 5G coverage. So it's a good idea. Anyway, this guy's been fired. Because women employees were trying to organize a walkout on Thursday to protest lenient handling of sexual misconduct in the workplace. We haven't been told whether he actually did anything. We haven't been told what the nature of his offense is. It's just enough that people were cross.
But there were, I think I said last time, there were about 45 people.
Yeah.
who'd already been fired for the same reasons.
So I do want to know if anyone's going to follow up with investigating these claims, because it seems to me that these days all you need in order to have someone fired is enough people in the company who are cross. Just enough people who are cross. That's all you need. It's like the H&M thing. You just need enough people who are cross and everybody shits themselves and fires people. And that is not how we should work. We should work on the basis of evidence. Evidence, not your lived experience. That's what you write a book about, or you tell your psychotherapist about. Evidence is how you get people hired, fired, convicted, blamed, and dealt with. Google Chief Executive Sundar Pichai sent a message to employees late on Tuesday, a copy of which was posted online by technology news website Ars Technica. Ars. That's good, right? ARS. And then finally, this is a story from the Mail and Guardian. They have suspended their political editor over involvement in an irregular PRASA tender. Well, this is no surprise. I mean, if you've read the Mail and Guardian, I'm sorry for you. But this is a terrible newspaper that has been on its way out for the longest time. As far as I know, they are completely insolvent. They're being kept alive by donations, and they've got a handful of subscriptions. It used to be a great newspaper. It really was. It was one of the newspapers that was brave enough to report and stuff that none of the others were able to. The Mail and Guardian has now suspended its political editor, Matuma Letswalo, while an independent investigation is conducted into allegations of a conflict of interest with the Passenger Rail Authority of South Africa. MNG made the decision to suspend Letswalo ahead of the release of results of an investigation by Worksmen's attorneys into tenders awarded to PRASA. Remember, PRASA is so rotten that we ordered those trains that were the wrong size.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Oopsie.
Yeah, just a big...
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they've got one of their own, their political editor, involved in this, the Mail and Guardian could not be in a worse position right now. I don't think Alex Jones, that crazy right-winger in America, would even buy the Mail and Guardian and turn it into something useful. And he's on the opposite end of the political spectrum to them.
I think they'll hear you say they could not be in any worse a position as a challenge.
Oh, you mean they're going to try
to do something even crazier.
Well, look at the time. We've got to get to Ben in the sport. Bitcoin trading at $6,337 and Ethereum at $198. Ben, what do you got for us?
Novak Djokovic is going to be the world number one in tennis again. I've got some football. I've got some rugby. And that's about it.
That's all right. Don't be embarrassed. You've still got more than the Mail and Guardian.
Well, that's what I thought. So Novak Djokovic, he is going to be the world number one next week. That's because Rafael Nadal has pulled out of the Paris Masters. Well, he won't be playing the Paris Masters because of an abdominal injury. Mm-hmm. Djokovic was 21st going into Wimbledon this year, which is incredible to think that he really did fall away. Not like Andy Murray fall away, but he fell away a lot. He had that elbow injury,
yes,
and he just wasn't winning. And then he came back this year, bloody strong. And he will be world number one again. Now, the last person to do this was Russia's Merit Safin back in 2000. Now, Nadal is 32, so he says he's got to be realistic about how he kind of uses his body going forward, because he would like to play for many, many years to come. Because, let's be honest, what do you have outside of tennis? He's not going to suddenly open a restaurant and become charismatic. He's a tennis player. He wants to play tennis.
Right.
Federer is still involved here. Now, he's, of course, as I said yesterday, 99 ATP Tour world titles.
Hmm.
So he's looking for 100th either this week at the Paris Masters or at the big ATP finals following that in London. Or probably next year at some lesser event where he doesn't have such stiff competition. Either way, he will get to 100 and it will be incredible. There is a big football this weekend with the Telkom Knockout Cup. So we're into the quarterfinal stages. So just to give you a heads up so you know what you're doing this weekend. On Saturday, all you fans of Baroka FC that listen to the show, I know you're in your hundreds. 3 o'clock, you're taking on Sundowns. It's all second league matches, of course. Amazulu, they'll be taking on Orlando Pirates. They'll be at 6 o'clock. And Maritzburg United versus Wits at 8:15. Chiefs will be playing Supersport United on Sunday. And that'll be at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
Happy days. Yesterday, the Proteas completed. Well, they got smashed by the Prime Minister's 11.
Good.
Incredibly embarrassing. Good. Scoring 173 with just Markram doing and Miller doing all right. Scoring,
I remember that's
the 40s.
Just the Australian Prime Minister and some of his friends.
It is, Gareth, yeah. And their wives shouting from the lawn outside. They only scored 173 and they got bowled out in 42 overs. Hugely embarrassing.
Yeah.
And then, the Aussies came out and led by George Bailey, who's a very unconventional chap. He scored 51 not out, and that was enough to steer his team to victory in the 37th over. Wow. Okay. Let's try not to draw too much into that, but it should never happen at this level. Rabada and Ngidi were the best of the bowlers, but ultimately that's just embarrassing from everything, South African cricket's perspective. I missed that other thing about football. It's the English Premier League this weekend. Now, Jose Mourinho was not given a ban for just being Jose Mourinho, so he can still watch his team. And it'll be an interesting weekend because Man City, they are looking to extend their sort of winning run. And they, just like last year, I can't see anyone really catching them. And they got really lowly Southampton at home at 5 o'clock on Sunday. So look for more points there. Man United, on the other hand, well, they're always chasing the game, aren't they? Saturday, first game there, 2:30. They'll be taking on Bournemouth away at Bournemouth at the Vitality Stadium. Mm-hmm. It's always good to throw that in from time to time.
Sure.
Leicester, well, this is going to be a sad game for them. Of course, their owner died in a horrific helicopter crash last weekend. They'll be away to Cardiff City, so look out for a moment of silence there and very teary fans.
By the way, I've seen a lot of news coverage around that. They've actually got footage of the helicopter coming. It's horrible, yeah.
I mean, it's pretty incredible. You think that the pilots, that helicopter could have gone down and taken out a whole bunch of fans, mm-hmm. but he managed to, in an attempt to obviously save the lives of everyone inside the helicopter, also managed to find some open ground to crash onto. Just a dreadful story, absolutely dreadful story. The big game for the weekend you need to look out for will be Saturday evening, 7:30, Arsenal versus Liverpool. Arsenal have been all right, but they've been like all right under the radar. They've been playing in that midweek Europa League thingy. Mm-hmm. They've been beating some okay teams. But Liverpool, they've been the high-flying giants that the Liverpool fans believe they should be. So that game is going to be bloody interesting. 7:30 on Saturday. Of course, there's lots of rugby this weekend. Huge amount. Starts off with Japan versus New Zealand on Saturday, 7:45. New Zealand they're testing a whole bunch of new players. They're playing against Japan after all. So they could probably play like a junior team against them. No disrespect to Japan, it's just that is the wealth of talent that New Zealand do have. There'll be 8 new caps in total. Mm-hmm. And then Wales, they'll be taking on Scotland, which seems odd. These guys play each other in the Six Nations. Why are they playing each other at the end of the year? Very odd. There it is, though. 4:45 is a tune-up for the other big matches they've got in weeks coming. And then Saturday at 5 o'clock, that's the big one. England versus South Africa. Now, South Africa have had a great record at Twickenham, or Twickers, depending on how snooty you are. But they haven't. Look at the current team. As strong as it may look, and as exciting as it may look, only Dwayne Vermeulen and Evan Etzebeth have actually recorded wins out of that team at Twickenham. So there's gonna be a lot of inexperience there, and hopefully a lot of people can really step up. Because that's the great thing about Northern Hemisphere tours, is that you're taking people outside of their comfort zones. So hopefully we'll learn a lot about the players going to the World Cup next year. And then at Soldier Field,
yes,
Ireland are taking on Italy, 10 o'clock. And then on Sunday, if you really, really like the Maori All Blacks, they'll be playing USA at 12:15. Golf. It is the Race to Dubai final series. So people have been playing on the European Tour all year, all around the world, in all kinds of formats. The European Tour is just the biggest circus of golf. It's amazing. It really is fantastic and it's exciting. But now we're into the nitty-gritty. We just had the WGC in China, which Xander Schauffele won. Now it's the Turkish Airlines Open. So what that means is that, much like the FedEx race to the lots and lots of money tournament, the Race to Dubai is a similar kind of thing. So if you're in the final series, top 125 players.
100 and top.
And then it gets whittled down from there, and then you get to play in these no-cut events where you make lots of money. So that is taking place this weekend, and because the time zone straight up ahead is Turkey, that'll be very preferable for South African golfing fans to watch. Next week, of course, is the big one, though. That is the Nedbank Golf Challenge, which will be the second last event of the European Tour, and it'll take place in Sun City. Now, if you are in the general Gauteng region, northwest region, wherever, it is such an event to get to. It really is. I'm not just saying it because the event is pretty much the same age as me, and I've watched it my whole life,
mm-hmm.
but there's improved infrastructure, there's improved transport systems, the ticketing is very affordable, and there's huge attractions once you're there. So Sun City is always a great place to go to. Next weekend, it's just going to be incredible. It's going to be huge crowds. Make sure you're part of it if you are a golfing fan. If you've never been to a golfing event, well, this is a pretty good one to go to. It's going to be a decent field. South Africa's best golfers will be there. And Mr. Gary Player will be there.
Very good.
He'll be waking up early, be at the gym, be walking
doing
around,
his thousand sit-ups,
greeting people,
sure,
taking photos of people, holding babies. He's going to do everything, basically. Everything. And, Gareth, I think that's pretty much it for sport. Not a whole bunch going on. The Proteas were embarrassing. There's great rugby this weekend. And if you're into football, there's also that too. That's it.
Thank you very much, Ben. Let's go to Sia. Let's find out what Sia has for us in Sid by Sia. Take it away.
Well, this morning I want to bring you some news about an exciting new drug treatment that could help to extend the lifespans of women who suffer from one of the world's worst cancer survival rates. So even after undergoing chemotherapy and surgery, supposedly 70% of ovarian cancer patients suffer relapses within 3 years of treatment. And even after that, only 35% are still alive 10 years after their initial diagnosis. This is really, really scary to find out. And once the cancer returns, it's considered terminal. So given all of this, there's a medical team who's been keeping their eye on this and trying to work on ways to overcome this. And they've now called this an unprecedented trial that they've undergone. And they have results because they've developed a new drug called olaparin.
Have you tried that one yet, Leanne?
Not that drug, not this week.
Yeah, okay. I can sign you up and perhaps you can see it.
She likes to try them.
Olaparib. It's dramatically increased the lifespan and survival rates of ovarian cancer patients. I think this is incredible. So the drug was given to women who had successfully eliminated all or part of their cancer by undergoing chemotherapy. And then 3 years after the women were started on the drug, so they've been doing results or this test from 2013, researchers have found that the drug was associated with a 70% reduction in mortality and cancer relapse.
That's fantastic.
This is compared to only a third of patients who would survive originally. So more importantly, the follow-up took place only 3 years after the drug's prescription, the treatment could offer protection for even longer amounts of time. So this is all of these results were published in the New England Journal of Medicine. And the team there is saying the most exciting finding is that more than half the patients on the drug have not relapsed with a minimum of 3 years of follow-up. So it really is exciting. It's one of these things where if you're really having a bad day, just think about the fact that these are great times to live in, despite what you may hear.
That's terrific.
That's your Sebastian for this morning.
Lovely. One more step against that horrible bloody cancer.
Yeah.
Good. All right, we're almost at 7 o'clock. We'll get into some news. The Burning Platform coming up next. Catherine Child will be joining us for that. The Burning Platform, of course, every week brought to you by Nando's. Who else? Who else would be brave enough to bring you this kind of news?
Guyashisa.
Ah, Guyashisa.
It's not shisaring today.
Actually,
it's today, actually.
It's a little nippy.
All right, but we will be here to look after you, and we will keep you informed. That's what we try to do every day. And with Nando's, we bring you the Burning Platform at 7 o'clock, a couple of minutes from now. You get to hear all the important stuff. Ben's doing sport. Leanne's got some stories for us. Sia's busy inspiring us. What a day. What a day. Isn't it great?
And it's great to be alive.
The first day of November. Enough to hear that from you, Leanne. That really is something.
Oh, a pinch and a punch for the first day of the month.
Is that what you do?
Don't you guys know that?
No.
Did you have no childhood?
No. Yes, but it was like 30 years ago.
That's abuse now. You don't pinch and punch children.
Yeah, you can't do that.
No, Sia, it's wrong.
Hashtag me too.
Oh, I forgot to tell you in the sport, Graham Smith got engaged. Sorry, ladies.
Wait, didn't he go through that bad divorce? Never mind, we don't relive the past.
Yeah, you're so negative. Okay, sorry. You're so
congratulations,
negative.
Graham Smith.
Who's he married?
Well, according to Sport 24, former Proteas captain Graham Smith has announced his engagement to Romy Lanfranchi.
What?
Lanfranchi?
Lanfranchi.
I probably ruined that, but
she's quite pretty.
Of course.
What is he doing now? Because he's not a cricketer.
Marrying more women.
No, but I mean, what's his job?
He's got things. He's selling briarwood.
Oh, okay.
Coles briarwood.
Briarwood?
Okay. That's good business. Nothing wrong
old
with that.
Cricket bats.
Braaiing's the number one leisure activity in South Africa.
There we go. That's very clever.
I mean, Bucky's boat are selling Vos.
Yeah, so between the two of them, you get everything you need. If you stop at Graham's house and you stop at Bucky's house, you can get the hoot and the Vos.
Then all you need is Ace. You're done.
Who's going to sell ice? Percy Montgomery can sell ice.
Yeah.
Jacques Dallas does the hair transplant, so.
He's
not invited to the spry. He's irrelevant for this.
What is wrong with you, Sia?
I saw a billboard of him the other day. It was like,
no, you didn't.
I swear to Buddha. He's doing like hair thingamabobbies.
He's a hair rejuvenation success story, yes, yeah. But so he's not selling hair products.
He's like an endorser model.
All right, stop.
The head of.
Stop it. I'm going to get Tony Braxton to clear your mind this morning. Love this song. You're making me high.
CliffCentral.com.